This is Jane McMillan. I am interviewing George W. Fitting, who is going to talk about growing up in Salisbury, his friends, his experiences in the high school, and anything else he wants to talk about. Today's date is September 4th, 2021. This is Cycle 4, File 33, and here we go. What is your full name?
George Whitfield Fitting.
How do you spell Whitfield?
It's a W-H-I-T-F-I-E-L-D.
Your birth date?
December 28th, 1988.
And your birthplace?
It's Hamilton, New York.
Your parents' names?
Mother, Jane Burgess Fitting. And father's Peter Martin Fitting.
Okay, we're going to talk about your educational background. Did you go to Salisbury Central?
Yeah, I started out there from kindergarten through second grade. That was around the time that computers were starting to be a thing. There was a game everyone liked to play back then called Oregon Trail, where you kind of set up your little wagon and it simulates making it to the other side of the country. But my mother didn't really like that they were kind of pressing us to spend a lot of time on computers and not really doing some of the, you know, basic skills that she would have liked us to learn.
Mm-hmm.
So after second grade, she sent me to Rudolf Steiner School.
That's in Great Barrington. Barrington.
Yes, exactly. And that school was very artistically focused, traditional learning. We learned how to, like, paint, make things out of wax, Norse, Greek myths. We did a lot of plays.
Very creative.
Very creative focused. And, you know, in art and literature, we'd sing a lot of songs. You know, we never did that at Salisbury Central. And woodworking, knitting, I knit a pair of socks there.
I remember.
Right. Crocheting, played the recorder and crocheted a recorder case. I thought I had a great experience there. At the time, I was kind of resentful because I just wanted to do, you know, what the normal people were doing. But I'm still in touch with friends from that time. I still remember a lot of the lessons I learned there. So I was there for third through sixth grade, but then I still maintained my friends back at Salisbury Central because we all lived in the same town and saw each other every summer. And then I convinced my mother to return me there in seventh and eighth grades because I planned to go to the public high school and didn't want to spend zero time with everyone else going in there. So I returned and graduated from Salisbury Central, did my last 2 years there, and then went to Housatonic for all high school.
When did you graduate from Salisbury?
Yeah, it was 2002, sorry. There we go.
Now, I do remember you had some weaknesses in math, so you were coming here and my husband was tutoring you in math.
Exactly. That was, I mentioned that Rudolf Steiner School was not really heavy on the math.
Hmm.
I remember we'd, like, illustrate the numbers, you know,
yeah,
things
yeah,
like that.
Yeah.
But it wasn't really spending a lot of time learning how to actually do math.
And you need math. You do need math.
Right. And I'm not necessarily inclined that way in the first place. So going back to Salisbury Central, you know, they had algebra, and even you could even take geometry in eighth grade if you were advanced enough.
Yep.
And there was like placement tests and I hadn't done any of that. So fortunately, your husband Foster agreed to tutor me over that summer. And so I wasn't a complete disaster when I got there. I still struggled with it a bit, but
but you at least knew the basics.
Exactly.
Now, you went to high school then. It would be 2003 to 2007?
Yeah, I graduated from high school 2006. So two to six.
Okay. Particularly with the high school, I'm interested in the jazz band. How did you get into that?
Yeah, there's a fantastic jazz band. First of all, at Salisbury Central, there's a great music teacher, Donna Finn.
Mm-hmm.
Very hands-on. She wrote the school song that goes like, Salisbury's fantastic, Salisbury's fine. You know, people have different feelings about that, but she wrote it, and she was she would send us to Northwestern regional competitions if you're good enough and spend time like training you personally. So she
She was a superb music teacher.
Yeah, so exactly. She did those competitions with me on trumpet, and she suggested me for the jazz band at Housatonic at that time, which was led by a woman named Carrie Morris.
How do you spell the Carrie?
I think it's with one R and an I, K-E-R-I. Morris.
M-O-R-R-I-S?
Yep.
All right. Were you playing the trumpet before you connected with Mrs. Finn?
I believe over the summer I picked it up. My mother got me lessons with a person named Matt Alexander. His father still lives in town.
Yep.
He's probably maybe about 10 years older than me. I remember he taught me how to make an email account when I was a child. And then he also taught me the trumpet. And then I kind of came in ready to play that in the Salisbury Central School band.
Do you play any other instrument?
I played piano at that time.
That's what I thought.
Took lessons with Judy Dansker.
Oh, yes.
She's a pretty fantastic musician, really well known. She loves Baroque music and is part of that Baroque concert group that puts on shows at local churches. Mm-hmm. And she's real professional. She would also teach kids piano at the same time. So I played that for several years and multiple kinds of recorder. There's the regular one you imagine, but then there's also, you get bigger and bigger, kind of like saxophone, play deeper notes. So I played a bunch of those for a while.
Do you keep up with any of your musical instruments?
Yeah, I picked up the ukulele a few years ago, so I kind of play that now. And I play the trumpet sometimes, but my wife and I recently got a house last year. Before that, when you're living in an apartment, it's not... The trumpet's not the best one to keep up with.
It's better than the violin.
Yeah, probably similar. So I did let that go a little bit. Although I did, I played it through college. It was a college jazz band too. And also, I played in a Salisbury Town band over the summers. But I do still have my trumpet, and I was thinking of getting back into it. Because
It's a wonderful avenue for meeting other people. And keeping you focused on other things besides just business.
Definitely. Everyone needs that.
Oh, yes. Now, was it the jazz band that went to the UK on a trip?
Yeah, it was. And Mrs. Morris was really exceptional instructor. She not only led the jazz band, but there was at that time, there was a girls' singing group called the Sweethearts, mm-hmm. men's singing group called the Heartbreakers, and then regular jazz choir, which is both of them combined, plus additional people who didn't make it into either one, and the jazz band, and the band. And she would train us for individual competitions, too. But I thought that, you know, she was so good, and she was really tough on you. Like, if you were the one messing up, then you would be playing it by yourself in front of everyone. So there's a lot of pressure not to be that person.
Yes.
You know, there's no coddling. She would call you out, but she would also actually help you improve. There's a little bit of terror in that instruction style, but I thought the music we produced was...
A little fear is good.
Right. But our concerts were exceptional. I thought that, you know, I was not the best player in the band by far, because there's plenty of excellent players. You know, a lot of them are still musicians.
But she made it so that you enjoyed it.
We enjoyed it, and we were proud of what we accomplished.
And that's so important. What year did you go? Was it your senior year?
I believe it was my junior year, and before that... We went to Disney World, and before that, I went to Disneyland. So, we were playing competitions in each of those places.
And so this was a competition that you were doing in England?
I think we did one competition, but then she arranged us to play a different, like we played at like a street festival in one place, and we played at a high school in another place, and got to meet the English kids there, mm-hmm. who were in their own band. Mm-hmm. You know, she'd arrange these impressive trips with tons of people, because she would bring not only the jazz band but also all three of those singing groups.
Yeah,
be a lot of people coming, and we're proud of what we did. And then she, the last year, Mrs. Finn replaced her, because I think Mrs. Morris got an offer at a different school. Can't remember which one, maybe Bantam, and Mrs. Finn took over.
So
and that year, I don't think we had a trip.
Your trip would have been about 2005.
2005.
And how long were you away?
It was a week.
7 days?
I believe so. I mean...
Boy, that was packed.
Maybe with one... I know.
Okay. And your dad went along as a chaperone.
He was a chaperone. It was him and another Peter Hill. I think he's unfortunately died from cancer since then, but they roomed together. My dad left all the passports on the plane when we got off. So fortunately someone noticed before it flew away again. And
oh my.
We started out in London. We went to played in Salisbury Cathedral.
It was, oh, aren't you fortunate?
And she was a little mischievous. You know, she had that jazz choir singing like short people in that church. It was a little irreverent, but also it sounded very nice. So, and we went to Canterbury as well, I believe, and mm-hmm. And spent a few days in London at different locations, and then. And then the high school was somewhere in the country. It wasn't a name I can remember, but
that's all right.
It's like
that's
a local
right.
public school.
Now, when you say public school, do you mean a comprehensive, which is a public school, or do you mean a public school such as Hotchkiss, which would be a private school?
Good point. It seemed more like a comprehensive.
Okay, that's what I thought, but I have to be.
And they had uniforms on, which I understand is pretty common in general there.
At the time that I was there, yes. I'm not sure what it's like 50 years later, but
right.
anyway. I'm going to switch to Boy Scouts.
Sure.
Now, you had a group of friends. I listened to Baxter's tape before you came this afternoon.
I got
to
hear that one.
Yes.
Hopefully they line up.
Yes, you do. and he said that there was a gang of four, and it was you and Baxter, Adrian Delassert, and Matt Winter.
Yes.
Is it Winter or Winters?
Winter with just an R.
Okay, that's what I thought. Were you in Cub Scouts?
Yeah, we were all in Cub Scouts from the onset. My mother was the den mother when it started out. My father helped out as well when we were, you know, in first or second grade.
Mm-hmm.
We would do campouts in Wack Forest.
Oh, yes.
There used to be a little kind of ramshackle wooden lodge there, and we'd put up our tents around it and make a fire. And we like lash together a table, do doughboys, cook stuff in our tin foil and canteens. It would invariably be a deluge. Yeah, of course.
Oh, yeah. Now, was this in Salisbury or was it Canaan?
Yeah, so the Cub Scouts themselves were in Salisbury. We started out meeting at Salisbury Central in a spare classroom after school, and then probably because I switched schools, we would then do it at that spare community room behind the Episcopal Church in Salisbury. You know, there's like
the parish hall.
Yes, that. So we meet there. We have the pine wood derbies there, where you make a little wooden car and race it down a track. And so my parents saw us all through graduating from Cub Scouts with the highest, you know, you go up through the ranks. Instead of merit badges in Cub Scouts, you wear little pins that go on your baseball cap. You know, the Cub Scout cap.
Mm-hmm.
Saw us all through there. And then four of us continued on to the Boy Scout troop, which at that time...
That was in Canaan, wasn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, in Canaan, run by a man named John Lannan. L-A-N-N-E-N.
I can't write that fast.
I talk very fast. So
I didn't
afraid.
Take shorthand. now, this was in Canaan, and it was the four of you that were in this. Did you have one Eagle project among the four of you, or did you have separate ones?
You have to do your own project, and it wasn't just us in there. There was another boy from Falls Village named Jeffrey Carlson. Jeffrey, that's at GEO.
Mm-hmm.
He made it all the way through to Eagle with us as well, and he went to Housatonic with us. And there were a few others that were older than us that, you know, that went through to Eagle as well. Most people who were in that troop made it to Eagle, which is pretty rare.
Yes.
It's a very small troop. It was in the building. If you drive through Canaan, keep going down that road. On the left, there's kind of like a white little house. There was a stage upstairs, so it seems like maybe it used to be like where something like the Elk Club met. By the time we got it, it was basically on the verge of being condemned. We just meet there anyway. Remember, we wanted to install a bathroom one time, but we were told, like, if you have us come and look at this, we're going to have to tell you that we have to take it down.
Okay.
So I don't think it meets there anymore, but yeah, so my Eagle project was, there's a walking trail through the woods in Canaan that was overgrown and going through a lot of swampy areas, so we built little wooden footpath bridges and covered it with wood chips and cut all those branches back. Adrian was to make bat houses. Oh, sorry. No?
I just need you at this
all
point.
Right.
I went to your ceremony where you received your Eagle certificate. What did you receive to prove that you had been an Eagle Scout?
Yeah, you get a... In Boy Scouts, your rank is on this round patch, so you kind of like an...
I know what the patches are.
Yeah, so you get that put on your uniform. You get a pin as well. And you get this little medal you can give to an adult who you think, you know, helped you get there. So I think all of us gave ours to Matt Winter's father because he was on a lot of the campouts with us. He'd been in the Navy, so we had a lot of outdoor skills, and he would teach us how to do carving and woodworking and things like that.
Do you remember what year the Eagle ceremony was?
I think it would have been 2006, right before we all went off to college.
Yes, because Foster had passed away the year before, and I went to it alone. Yes, that would be right. This probably isn't in the right order. Holly Williams Camp.
Oh, yeah.
Which came first, the Boy Scouts or the Holly Williams Camp, or were they sort of simultaneous?
Yeah, they're both when I was pretty young. I imagine they're probably simultaneous because I don't have a clear delineation there.
Yeah.
But my grandmother, Lou Burgess, was very involved with the Holly Williams House, and I think she was on the board of what was maintaining it at that time.
She was chair of it.
Yes, yes.
Because she was chair of docents, and that's how I wound up being a docent.
Wow, I didn't know that.
Oh, yes.
But we still have crafts from those projects in our attic.
I can believe that.
So she would run a summer camp there. My mom would help her, my mom, Jane.
Mm-hmm.
And
I helped, too.
You were.
Yes, I was. Yes. Because my husband came in to teach the boys.
Knot time.
Knots.
Yeah, remember
yes.
that.
You do remember
yeah.
that. Oh, good. How many years did you go to the camp? Do you remember?
I think many.
Probably.
Probably till... I can't remember when it was sold back to a private owner, but I think I went to them
multiple
pretty
times.
Much up until that happened.
Yeah. And it was mixed boys and girls.
Mixed boys and girls.
What was the age range?
Probably third grade through
9 to 12-ish?
Yeah, or even like 14, 15. Sometimes there'd be an older person, like a teenager, who'd teach us how to do something she was good at, like baking or, mm-hmm. you know, a skill she had. And we do a lot of, you know, crafts, arts and crafts that children from the Holly Williams time would have done. We baked soft pretzels. We read the Peterkin papers.
Oh, yes.
We make historical toys, like a hoop and stick and stuff like that. It was a really good time.
Now, in Baxter's... He talks about chasing butterflies and insects.
Yeah, we spent a lot of time outside. There was a big garden. There's an outdoor maze as well.
Yeah.
If you get through the maze, you can ring the bell in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
There are wild thimbleberries we would pick. I recall they also had these Tory-like uniforms and Patriot uniforms
oh, yes.
you put on and simulate the battles, the revolutionary battles. So we do that as well.
Did you do other things besides... how long was the camp? Was it a week or 2 weeks or what?
Yeah, I think it would be multiple weeks, but maybe not. I went to for the whole thing, but maybe normally the kids would come for a week and then
I think it was
round.
A week.
Yeah.
And there were maybe 2 4-week sessions? No, it wouldn't be that long.
I think it was multiple 1 week sessions.
Yeah.
But to me, I would just go to all of them because my family doing
well,
it. So.
Sure. Did you go to the Grove at all?
Yeah, I went to the Grove every summer.
Swim team?
Wasn't on swim team.
Sports? Swimming? Kayaking? Any of that stuff?
Adrian and I took sailing merit badge at Boy Scout camp called Camp Matatuck. So we learned how to sail, and then we would go sailing in Lakeville Lake. I don't think you had to pay. You could just sign out one of the sailboats for free.
Mm-hmm.
And at that time, Art Wilkinson was still there. He would kind of give us more advanced sailing lessons as well, teach us how to, like, go around buoys. He might have been involved with a sail team, a local sail team, I can't remember, but they're, like, sunfish and sailfish, so pretty small boats.
Yes.
One or two people can sail it.
Um,
I also worked there when I was 16 in a program that, I don't know if they still have it.
Summer youth program?
Summer youth program.
I had an intern this year for summer youth program that's still going. So you worked at the Grove.
Yeah. When I signed up for it, I thought it'd be like selling ice cream or something, but it was actually like emptying the trash can barrels and driving the tractor around and slicing back the plants and fixing the fence, which actually built a lot of character. And I think of that job a lot because before that, my summers were just doing whatever I wanted. That was pretty hard work and kind of thankless, but at the same time, I had appreciation for what it takes to keep that place running and gave me a little bit of work ethic.
Yes.
Sorely needed at that time.
We all do. And it's so good. You get paid for that. I mean, you get some money for it.
Right.
But you learn to show up on time, to wear the proper clothes, to follow instructions. If you can't get into work for some reason, you send an excuse. I mean, it gives you a real good background when you get out into the real world later on as an adult. And that's something that is priceless. It truly is.
I completely agree with that. And, you know, a lot of those jobs are well-known local places, so probably going to as a kid your whole life, and then you get to see the other side of what it's like to make something like that work, which is also valuable.
Oh, yeah. Did you play sports at all?
Yeah, I played soccer badly, you know, second grade on.
Uh-huh.
I technically got onto the varsity team in senior year of high school, but I'm not that coordinated, so I wasn't the best player. We made it to the playoffs that year, though. I also played indoor and outdoor track in high school, which is interesting because we don't have an outdoor track, so we would run around on the streets in the snow in our sweatpants. And I can't remember his name, but there was this elderly coach at that time who he used to coach like long jumping Olympic athletes. He'd drive next to us like smoking cigarettes, saying to pick up your heels as we were running, you know, like 10 miles in the snow. But so we got in pretty good shape from that.
Yes, you would.
And then I was actually not that bad at track itself, and I did the 300-meter hurdles and 110-meter hurdles, which are even higher. And,
wait a minute, 300 hurdles?
Yep.
And the other one?
110-meter hurdles. Those are higher because it's a shorter distance. And long jump, triple jump. That time we had a cinder track.
Ooh.
You had the big metal spikes in your shoes, but they replaced it with a much nicer one since I graduated.
Well, that's good. That's good. Now, actually, the summer youth program ties into the work experience. Didn't you work at Johnny Cake Books for a while?
Yeah, that actually ties into another thing I wanted to mention, if you weren't going to ask about it. I mentioned Judy Dancer was my piano instructor. Mm-hmm. Her husband, Paul DiPaolo, worked at in the IT department at Hotchkiss School, but he was, like I said, when I was a kid, it was when personal computers were becoming more commonplace and kind of the world was changing in that way. Mm-hmm. He would run these computer workshops with us in that same parish hall where me and my friends and other local kids, probably third, fourth grade, he would teach us how to take computers apart, put them back together, learn the software at the time, you know, Microsoft Word and things like that, how to do basic troubleshooting, which I think was really incredible and helped a lot of us make that transition. And so he would also farm us out to older families who had just got a computer or didn't know how to use it. So he'd send one of us there for like $10. We'd teach him how to do the basics. Or if something wasn't working, you know, he'd send us in as kids, 12 or 13, you know, get a little pocket money and help them out.
Good. If I have trouble getting this into the laptop, I know who to call.
It's funny. The older I've gotten, the technology's kept advancing, and you'd probably be better off asking another 13-year-old at this point. You know.
I got a few of those, too.
So I picked Johnny Cake Books' computer once, but we hit it off, me and Dan Dwyer, the owner. Mm-hmm. So we had to come back and like once a week to do any deal with any technical issues that came up. But then he just offered me a job to work there for a whole summer, around when I was 13, or 14, I think. You know, that's when I started doing the whole summer. Mm-hmm. And before me was a girl named Erin Bartram.
Wait a minute, Erin?
E-R-I-N, Bartram, B-A-R-T-R-A-M. So she was his assistant who would work there, but she went to college, and I replaced her and would kind of sit the shop over the summers. And he'd also taught me how to appraise the books he was selling. It's a rare and out-of-print bookstore. And there's a specific terminology you use to describe them in commercial catalogs and online sales. We taught me that as well. Things like how to the size of the book. Octavo means the paper enough.
How do you spell that word?
O-C-T-A-V-O.
I'm sorry?
O-C-T-A-V-O. It's like 8-V-O.
Okay, yep.
It means they start out with a single piece of paper when I print a book. It means they fold it eight times.
Eight times. That's your Latin.
And a quarto is twice as big.
Yep.
Right. So things like that, how to describe the binding, how to research whoever has signed their name in it, see if you can find out who they were, make a story for who used to own it, and how to describe the condition. It was a great experience. And, you know, it's almost like art or antiques. You just...
How many summers, years did you work with him?
Yeah, that's throughout high school, start and eighth grade, and... Yeah, so I guess five, but then I come back and do it in through college too. So probably more like eight or nine.
Something about Hugh McMillan. Did you do something with his library?
Yeah, he was. I didn't notice until he died. But once he did, he was a really prolific collector of fine press work. So be a lot of these little independent presses that'll publish, you know, 100 copies. Of a book of poems or you know, a short story or a famous piece of literature. It'll usually be extremely well done, really nice paper, original artwork, very nice binding, and there's lots of these, and people like to collect them. Mm-hmm. And you know, but there'll only be 100 copies of that book, and that's all that exists forever. So if it becomes a popular press, it can be pretty hard to find and get very expensive. So house is filled with, you know, full collections of all these fine presses, bookcases, stacks of books in front of him. It was like that. That's what he spent his life on. And when he died, we were sent to, you know, appraise it. And I think Dan Dwyer actually purchased it at the end. And he still got a lot of it for sale at his store because there was so much. It was all perfect condition as well.
Naturally. Well, if you're going to do first editions or collectibles, you want the best condition you can get.
Right.
Was that something that you did with Dan, or did he have you do it and then he oversaw it? How did that work?
Yeah, I think it was some of each, so I would...
You'd do the preliminaries?
Right.
Okay.
I would do the preliminaries, describe the books. He would also work next to me at the same time. Okay. If something seemed exceptional, I might point it out to him, something like that. And I'm not even sure. I think there's still a portion of it that maybe hasn't even been looked at yet.
Probably. How long did it take you to do that?
Yeah, definitely the whole summer. And there are just so many titles. And I remember some of them, he stored some of them at, there's kind of a warehouse type building in Salisbury at the end of the bike path.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so a lot of them are stored in there. I think he's been transitioning them into his store as he sells them. We also try to list them online, so even if they can't be fit in the actual store, he might be able to make a sale still.
Good. I'm hoping somebody will buy some of my books because they're on his website. Speaking of that, how long does he keep a listing on his website? Does it stay on forever, or is there a time limit?
I think forever.
Good.
A lot of the book dealers, you know, they'll give you about half of what they think they can sell it for because they might not sell it for 10 years, so they have to factor that in,
yep.
You know?
I do know.
And then I know he has a little, at least he used to, at the fall festival, he'd have an outdoor sale,
mm-hmm.
and that'll usually be books that he's had for 20 years that obviously aren't getting bought, so he just, you know, will sell them as more of a tag sale type thing.
Didn't you work as a waiter someplace?
Yeah, that was Past Doral Restaurant in Lakeville.
Okay.
That was... we love that restaurant, and I think Dan Dwyer actually recommended me. I was looking for another job when I graduated from college to save extra additional money.
Sure.
So I was back at the bookstore, English degree, not a lot of necessarily obvious career paths for that. I was trying to save as much money as I could, so it wasn't a full waiter, it was a runner, which is like one step down. So basically, clean off all the tables, bring the food out to people. I would... You know, bring them more bread and water and things like that. So that was run by Karen Hamilton.
Is that a K?
With a K. And her husband was the chef. He's Frederic.
I remember.
I don't. I don't think they had the same last name, but I can't remember what his last name was.
That's all right. We'll get along with that one.
Hamilton. Karen Hamilton, right?
Yep.
How long did you work there?
I worked there just for that
one summer?
Yeah, basically. I worked through that winter, too, because I ended up moving to Los Angeles in February. So I worked there from, you know, May through February of 2010 to 11. At that time, that was the restaurant people would come to in town. It was very nice French cuisine.
It was superb.
Yes.
The only problem for me was I remember when it was Elizabeth Ha's home.
Yes, it's a house.
To go into that as a restaurant sometimes was upsetting, but that was a personal thing. The food was superb, absolutely superb. Do you have other memories of growing up in Salisbury that you'd like to share? I've tried to cover the basics.
Yeah, that was a lot. I would say, you know, my friends and I would bike to each other's houses on a public bike path. We would just play in the creeks, watch Okastanok Brook, I believe is the technical name of it.
Yeah.
You know, and go to the grove and play in the woods.
I can spell it, but I'm not going to do it now.
We'll make you spell like Phil Lake's real name.
Can do.
You know, but I thought that was, you know, it was really amazing, just outdoor opportunities and really safe, beautiful place to grow up. Another thing I noticed was, there's a lot of older people living in town, and the chance to interact with them as children, I realized as I left here, a lot of people haven't had that opportunity growing up. So I feel like we have a really strong sense of history and connection to the past, and we got a lot of insight and, you know, wisdom for people who've, you know, for instance, my grandmother was born in 1932. She had the radio shows she grew up with on cassette that I listened to, and it's just this window into how things used to be. As a kid, it seems a really long time ago, but the older I get, I can see how obviously it wasn't that far away, but people just don't have that kind of sense of how the world used to be, and I think it's really important to have it, and that's something we did have here. I guess another thing was the Salisbury Town Band. I think we touched on that briefly, but I played trumpet in that. My aunt had played trumpet in it as well. My aunt Carol Robinson and her sister Margaret Teichman had been like a baton twirler, I think, possibly. And but that band was started in 1928, and I played in it from eighth grade, you know, in summers through college, and my trumpet. We had a little red and white uniforms. We marched in the firemen's carnival parades, playing like John Philip Sousa songs. Mm-hmm. We play it, you know, every year at the Town Grove for Memorial Day, and we played
Memorial Day.
Yeah, Memorial Day. We marched
and
on
4th of July.
And 4th of July, and on Memorial Day is another tradition. A Salisbury band trumpet will play taps at the cemetery, and someone else will be off in the woods and play it back like the ghost of the soldiers we've lost. I thought that just made a really strong impression on me, and then, you know, the fact that something like that can exist for so long is really impressive, especially in these days when people hardly join any groups like that. And I looked at their website; it's still going on, which is something that's very nice to see.
Oh yes, George, thank you so much. This has been a pleasure.
Sure, thank you.